Hello, everyone, and welcome to Speaking with Joy, a podcast about books, beauty, and music. So get yourself a cup of tea, sit down, and let's begin. To experience life is not to figure it out, or even to understand it, but to suffer it and rejoice in it as it is. Though we have life, it is beyond us. We do not know how we have it or why. We do not know what's going to happen to it or to us. It is not predictable. Though we can destroy it, we cannot make it. It cannot, except by reduction in the grave risk of damage, be controlled. It is, as Blake said, holy. This is Wendell Berry from Life is a Miracle, an essay against modern superstition. Well, welcome back to Speaking with Joy, everyone. This week, I have a special treat for you. I will be doing a shorter episode mainly devoted to my favorite poetry. I'm doing this because I just finished a lot of writing on my PhD dissertation, and I wanted to do something fun and extroverted, so I thought I'd come and sit in my room and read poetry to a microphone, which will be a break for me, and I hope it will be a delight for you. So today's episode is not my normal. I just wanted to share with you some of my favorite poems, but also to share some fun news and various announcements. The first announcement is you may have noticed that I changed my opening theme music. There's kind of a fun story behind that, so I thought I would tell you. Now, back, I think when I was graduating high school, my brother Joel composed this for me, the opening song. And Joel, I don't know, some of you may know this, he is a composer, so he attended Berklee School of Music, and he's worked in film and choral and orchestral music for the last 10 years, which is a great delight to have as a brother. And for my birthday, after I graduated high school, he did this song for me, and it was called The Garden of Your Soul. He did one for me and one for my sister, and it's funny because the one for my sister is this very kind of somber, growing, moody, beautiful song, and mine is this kind of quick, bouncing song, and I think that he did that to reflect our personalities. But he sent this to me and called it The Garden of Your Soul, saying that he wanted me to think of cultivating the garden of my soul. And I thought it was perfect. I had been kind of wanting a new theme song for the podcast, and I was flipping through my library on my computer, and I had totally forgotten that he'd given me this song, but I thought this is perfect because part of what I hope to do with this podcast is to help all of us cultivate the gardens of our souls through watering it with beauty and planting good ideas and beautiful stories and things that would cause us to flourish and cause our soul to flourish. So that's just a fun announcement and explanation of my newer theme music to say that it is the garden of your soul, because I hope that together this podcast can be something that helps all of us cultivate the gardens of our souls. So that is fun. The other thing I wanted to announce is that in the upcoming couple of weeks, we'll be entering next week into the season of the church year, which is Lent leading up to Easter. And this has always been a season that's really meant a lot to me. In the past, I think I told you this in one of the other episodes, I have fasted Facebook, and that always has an amazing effect upon me, and I get a lot done. But more, just in general, I think that this space of time to kind of ruminate on some of the really deep parts of both my faith and my life has really been influential for me. And so I wanted to do something with the podcast that would kind of walk through that season together, the season of Lent. And Lent is a time of all of those fun parts of Christianity, which is to say, dwelling on your own mortality, thinking about and repenting of your sin, and thinking about what it means for Christ to die and rise for us. And as somber as all that sounds, and it is somber, I think much of it is beautiful and gets to the heart of what it is to be a human, what it is to struggle with the ambiguities and strangeness of death and sin, and to walk through that in a beautiful way, knowing that we walk through it with with Jesus, who is not separate from all those strange and difficult experiences of humanity, but who walks through and redeems those with us. So I kind of want to celebrate that season with you all by doing some podcasts kind of around, loosely based on the theme of Lent. So right before Ash Wednesday, I'll have a episode on the very exciting idea of memento mori, remembering that you will die, and we'll talk about how that's been explored through art. And just in general, we'll be taking kind of a journey through the themes of Lent with art, which I think is one of the best ways to do it. They'll kind of act as our guides and our walking through it. So that's just a fun announcement of what I will be doing in the next couple of weeks with the podcast. And then I have a particularly fun announcement, which is that I will be doing a giveaway for the podcast. So I'd had this in my mind for a while, and I think it would be a lot of fun, and I'm just now getting back to it because I'm back and settled in. But the idea behind it is if you enter and if you win, you will either get the very, very tippy-top prize, which is a special package full of Scottish goodies. It will have at least, at the very least, something to eat, something to wear, something to look at, and something to read, along with a note from me. Or if you're one of the other five people who gets their name drawn, I will send you a postcard from Scotland. And I just thought this would be a fun thing. I thought if somebody else were in a place that I was interested in, like France or Ireland or India, I would enjoy getting a package with things from those places. So I thought perhaps you all might as well. And the idea behind it, too, is that I would love to spread the word about the podcast. So the way that you can enter this is by doing three things. The first one is to go on iTunes, rate the podcast, and leave a review. Either one of those things, rated or leave a review, would be great. The second thing is to then share your favorite episode on some form of social media. That can be anything. You could share it on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. If you don't have social media, just send it in an email to a friend. Send your favorite podcast episode to someone. Share it with someone. That's all I ask. And then the third thing is just simply to email me telling me that you've done these two things at thejoinusthebrave@gmail.com. That email is also on my website if you didn't catch it. thejoinusthebrave@gmail.com. Just email me, confirm that you have first of all rated and reviewed it on iTunes, and second of all that you've shared it with someone on some form of social media. And you know, you can tell me which one, and then I will put your name in. And if you win, I'll ask if your address, but I won't ask for that unless you win, so don't worry about that. But I think it'll be grand fun, so please do enter the drawing, and I'm going to leave it open until 2 weeks from today. So I believe that's going to be the 22nd, but basically two Tuesdays from now, whatever that is. I'll put it up on my blog as well. So please do enter that giveaway. So those are my few announcements. Nothing too big deal, but I thought it was worth having a podcast for to tell you all that. And now I want to just do a shorter podcast than I usually would, just kind of celebrating some of my favorite poetry. And I'll really be doing it all around the idea of poetry that inspires hope in us, hope and wonder. Now, today, something very exciting happened in St. Andrews. It snowed. Now, it's very cold almost all the time lately. It makes me grumpy how cold it's been. But snow is kind of the reward for how cold it is, because if it's just cold all the time, but you never get snow, it just feels kind of like you don't get the prettiness. You just get the grayness and you have to wear tons of clothes and feel miserable all the time and have a really high rent bill. Sorry, didn't mean to rant on that. Not rent, utilities. When it snows, there's kind of a magic and you feel rewarded for all the cold. And another part of this is that I've had the great luck to live in some very beautiful places. I've gotten to be in St. Andrews and in Oxford. And in neither of those places, up until today, had I gotten to see it snow. It snowed, like, last year I was out of town the few times it snowed in St. Andrews. I had left just before it snowed when I was in Oxford. So I've always kind of had this desire to see everything in the snow. And today I finally got to see it. And so it wasn't a huge snow. Everything was just kind of dusted, but it just transforms everything. And that's something that I've always loved about the snow. You know, I come from Colorado where we got tons of snow. And the thing that's kind of marvelous to me about snow is that it totally transforms every part of an environment. It kind of awakens this new way of seeing the world that you wouldn't otherwise have access to. And I just think that's incredibly beautiful and special. And so I was so excited to see that today in my St. Andrews. So I had a lot of work to get done, but I took a walk. I walked by the beach and I saw all of the sides of the hills and leading down, even the sand on the beach was covered in snow. And then I looked in the distance and there was snow on all the mountaintops and not mountaintops. I shouldn't say that as a Coloradoan, but the snow on the sides of the hills in the distance you can see over the sea. And then I went up to the cathedral, the ruins of the cathedral, and it was all dusted, and it was just absolutely gorgeous. And it started making me think about, I kind of have a backlog of poems that come to mind when I encounter beauty. It's like I need something beyond just, oh my gosh, isn't this beautiful, to express the wonder that I experience. And my friends always joke here, a couple of my friends would always joke that they would count how many times in a week I would say, oh, it reminds me of this poem, and start quoting a poem, which is, you know, yet again, my identification with Anne of Green Gables is strong and deep and essential in my personality. So today I was thinking of that and thinking about these poems that articulate the sense of wonder, this breaking, the seeing the world in a new way because of some beauty or some natural occurrence. And several of those poems that I always go back to are actually, I discovered in one of my classes last year. And I discovered them in a very different environment than the current snowy coldness. But they both kind of had a similar effect to me. Last year, when I was in a class with my now advisor, Gavin Hopps, we had these just gorgeous days in April when it was just transcendently lovely and everything was green and coming up with daffodils and beautiful flowers. And so we had class outside, and it just happened to be that we were doing the several weeks where this happened. One week was on romanticism and one week was on the epiphanic moment in poetry and how that's been expressed. And so he gave us this little collection of printed out poems. And by collection, I mean like he just copied and pasted several poems onto blank white paper. And I loved several of them so much that I have literally carried them around with me in my wallet ever since. So I'm reading to you today. Two of the poems I'll be reading to you are actually off of that set of poetry that we had done together. And I'd read some of them, but I hadn't read others when I encountered it last year. But I was just thinking today how beautiful it was that these poems struck me as articulating that experience of wonder, of there being kind of a break in our ordinary experience. And that it broke in with me and expressed that sense of wonder, both in a blooming, sunshiny springtime when everything was coming up new, but also in the wondrous white of winter. So without further ado, I'm going to tell you what we will be reading. The first one is, we'll be looking at, I think it's just titled, I Thank You God, or something to that effect, by E.E. Cummings. It doesn't actually have the title on here. And then I'll be looking at a poem by Sylvia Plath, and then finally we'll be ending with a poem by Wendell Berry. And they all kind of are around this experience of things that break with our ordinary experience of life and awakening wonder. And so, without further ado, I want to just start by reading you this poem by E.E. Cummings, and then we will talk about it. I thank you, God, for most this amazing day, for the leaping greenly spirits of trees and a blue true dream of sky, and for everything which is natural, which is infinite, which is yes. I, who have died, am alive again today, and this is the sun's birthday. This is the birthday of life and of love and of wings and of the gay great happening, illimitability of earth. How should tasting, touching, hearing, seeing, breathing, any lifted from the know of all nothing, human merely being, doubt unimaginable you? Now the ears of my ears are awake. Now the eyes of my eyes are opened. Oh, it's just so lovely. This is just one of my favorite poems, and is the thing that always comes to mind when I experience a beautiful day. Now, of course, even as I enjoy the snow, I can't help but wish for the summer and the spring and the leaping greenly spirits of trees, which are currently mostly gray and leafless. But I think that this still beautifully depicts that feeling of wonder when you experience absolutely beautiful natural environment. Now, there's a couple of things to just note about this poetically, what he's doing with it as an actual text, that I actually think kind of get to the heart of what he is also trying to communicate. The first thing to notice is that this is actually a sonnet. So a sonnet is a poem that has a very kind of particular structure and rhyming pattern. This is an Italian sonnet. So someone who's famous for sonnets, you might think of Shakespeare. There's many, Shakespeare's famous for those. And it has this very particular rhyming structure and very particular kind of amount of verses. So when you look at this, you see that it's divided up into parts. And we've talked about a sonnet before also in here, which is the sonnet by Gerard Manley Hopkins, where he does God's grandeur. That's also sectioned into a sonnet. And there's this kind of sense of like a shifting moments. So in this poem, you can feel where it goes from talking to God to this kind of introspective part where he goes from the, I thank you, God, to I who have died today am alive again today. And it's this shifting kind of back and forth, and the sonnets do that. But the point of this is that sonnets are very structured. There is a way that you do sonnets. They are meant to kind of, you know what to expect, you know what the rhyming pattern will be, and there's a sense of traditionality and of structure. But what is delightful about this is that he uses a sonnet, but he has all of these unconventionalities in it, all of these things that break out, that surprise you, that do things you're not expected, you know, that you're not expecting to. So several of those things are, first you have, you can't see this because I'm reading it to you, but I encourage you to actually look up the text of the poem. He uses things that we wouldn't usually think of as good grammar. He has, when he says, I thank you, God, he uses a little I, so an undercase, a lowercase I. And then when he uses you for anything, he capitalizes the you. And he does this partially just to express a humility, that he feels small as he's encountering this beautiful environment around him. And then that he's recognizing the kind of otherness and hugeness and holiness and strangeness of the God that he's experiencing as he looks to nature. It's the creator that is coming through this experience to him. And so he capitalizes the you. Something else he does is he does something called functional conversion. So this can be your take-home, use it on Jeopardy phrase for the day. And basically, all that functional conversion is it's when you kind of use a word and you turn it to something that's not. So an example when I Googled this is, if I were to say, oh, I get so tired of toothbrushing. All right, so toothbrush is a noun, but I have turned it into a verb. So that's what functional conversion is. It's changing words to give them, to make a noun a verb a noun. So several places he does this. You could see probably the best example of this is when he says, how should tasting, touching, hearing, blah, 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 lifted from the know of all nothing, human merely being. So this is kind of a play on words, right? Because he's both saying a human being, but he's also making it into kind of a double use of that word and turning it and a human merely being. The other place he does that is, well, there's several places where he makes words, he's switching their meanings. He's not switching their meaning, he's turning it into something it's not. And I think that unconventionality is, you know, you're using this very strict sonnet form, but in it, things are becoming things that they weren't before. There's kind of this sense that these words give more than they are, that they push beyond. And that's kind of what he's doing with the whole poem as he looks at nature and looks at this beautiful day. Is he saying, I see this beauty, but it gives me more even than just it is, if that makes sense. So we can look at the trees and the sky and it's all beautiful, but together it pours through something more than what it is just physically. It waters our souls with beauty. It turns nouns into verbs, turns these nouns, these trees, into things that are doing something to us, that are moving us. And so by doing that, kind of making words do things that you don't expect them to do, it's like the sense of the breaking out of beauty, kind of getting into us. And so I think that that's what this poem does, and what it always does for me is that it's in this sonnet form, but then it has these things that break out and that surprise us and change. And in that, I think that he is doing two things with the sonnet. First, he's showing that there is order and beauty in the wildness of creation. So he could have just done this poem as all unexpected, but there's this sense that because he does it as a sonnet, that we're to see in all of this wildness an order and a calm and a wonder and a beauty that to him speaks of a God. You know, he says, how could a human merely being doubt unimaginable you? That there is something in looking to this wildness of nature that speaks to, even when we are having a hard time believing, it speaks to this sense deep in us that there's an underlying meaning and an underlying meaning maker. But the second thing it does is that it shows that beauty breaks through our own kind of sense of order and control. So even as you have this order and control of the sonnet, it's breaking through and doing things that are unexpected and surprised. And I think if you got a chance to listen to last week's episode about, the imminent frame, that it kind of constricts us and that makes us feel like we're stuck in this way of seeing the world where nature is only physical, where ourselves are isolated, and where our sense of choices and meaning and time is kind of constricted and made objectified. Beauty breaks through that and surprises us and makes us just kind of feel that there is more, even if we sometimes have a hard time seeing what that more is. And I think that that is what I love about days like today, is that my ordinary way of seeing the world really is very much like the imminent frame. I oftentimes do experience the world in that. But then sometimes a beauty like this can break us out and come to that question that he says at the end. How should tasting, touching, hearing, seeing, breathing, any human merely being doubt unimaginable you? And yet I love that he still calls it the unimaginable you of God, that it's still something bigger than we could encounter or imagine. And I think that the very last clause where he says, now the ears of my ears awake, now the eyes of my eyes are opened, I think that gets to the heart of it, that he's saying that underneath all of this beauty, there is a further meaning that, you know, that we have to be open, not only in our eyes, but opened in our heart. And that as we do that, we receive this electrical meaning and beauty of the universe. So I absolutely love that. And I need to actually memorize it. I've memorized good portions of it just by reading it so many times, but it always comes back to me when I encounter the beauty and wonder of the world. And it shows me how transcendent outside beauty and, you know, this experience of the world can break through my deafness and my blindness and my kind of lack of hope in the world and shatter that deafness and give me a sense of hope and meaning. But, and perhaps you have felt this or are feeling this, we cannot always see the world that way. And for whatever reason, there are times where we cannot seem to open the ears of our heart, or the ears of our ears, or the eyes of our eyes. There are times when nature seems mute to us, where it does not speak, where it doesn't give more than it is. So what do we do to find hope in those moments? And how can we hope to find whatever secret is kind of latched and locked behind all of that? How can we hope to experience the beauty that's there? And that is what brings us to our next poet. And that is Sylvia Plath. And this is a poem called The Black Rook and Rainy Weather. I think I want to talk a little bit about Sylvia Plath before I read this poem. And I think it's interesting that both she and E.E. Cummings wrote within the same kind of, you know, time span, which was right around the mid 20th century, after you'd had these two huge upheavals. We had the world wars and nuclear war, and there was this sense of kind of how do we regain hope? And we talked about that last week in my podcast with Bose. And they're both writing around this time and wrestling with that feeling. And Sylvia Plath particularly struggled with finding hope in those moments because she had a lifelong struggle with depression. And in the end, she actually died by suicide, which is a very tragic end. But I think that through a lot of her poetry, she still is wrestling with that kind of givenness that she experiences in the world. There's still beauty even when she can't see it, and sometimes even when she doesn't want to see it. And that is the beauty that I find in this poem. But I think that it's good to recognize and to say that it's a normal experience of human beings, that when we've gone through trials or traumas, or even just being a human in the world, there will be long periods of time where we just cannot seem to get at the magic of beauty in the world. There are times where when you look at a sunrise or when you look at the snow over St. Andrews, it will seem like it's electric, like just to touch it is to experience the meaning of it. And there will be times where it seems dull and black and white. It reminds me of, there's a poem by, or not a poem, a song by Andrew Peterson. And it opens with the line, "Why don't the mountains make me cry no more?" They don't sing the way they did before. They're just piles of stone, as dead as bone, like horses in a field of war. And they just don't make me cry no more. And that that verse always got to me, because there have been times in my life where I've thought, oh man, I used to look at this beautiful thing and it used to awaken me with wonder and with beauty. But right now it just doesn't. It just kind of strikes me as whatever, meh. And there's a fear with that, that you'll never return to that experience of beauty and of hope. And I think that a lot of our world kind of conspires to make us feel that way. We have kind of bleak news cycles, and we're all attached to the internet, where we don't really even experience that much of the beauty of the outside world and the surprising nature of other human beings. And so it can be easy to feel like whatever wonder or the electricity of beauty that we've experienced, that it was the last time. And whether that's a period of difficulty in your life or a struggle with depression, it can feel like we won't experience the hope that comes from the beauty in nature. But I think that there is always a hope that we will. And somebody who is a great example of this is Sylvia Plath with this poem, which is all kind of a meditation on that. So let me read it to you. On the stiff twig up there hunches a wet black rook, arranging and rearranging its feathers in the rain. I do not expect a miracle or an accident to set the sight on fire in my eye, nor seek any more in this desultory weather some design, but let spotted leaves fall as they fall, without ceremony or portent. Although I admit I desire occasionally some back talk from the mute sky, I cannot honestly complain. A certain minor light may still lean incandescent out of the kitchen table or chair, as if a celestial burning took possession of the most obtuse objects now and then, thus hallowing an interval otherwise inconsequent. By bestowing largesse, honor, one might say love. At any rate, I now walk wary, for it could happen even in this dull, ruinous landscape. Skeptical, yet politic. Ignorant of whatever angel may choose to flare suddenly at my elbow. I only know that a rook, ordering its black feathers, can so shine as to seize my senses, haul my eyelids up, and grant a brief respite from fear of total neutrality. With luck, trekking stubborn through this season of fatigue, I shall patch together a content of sorts. Miracles occur, if you care to call those spasmodic tricks of radiance miracles. The wait's begun again, the long wait for the angel, for that rare, random descent. I think that this poem so perfectly captures kind of what I was talking about, those periods of time where you, as she says, do not expect a miracle or an accident. And I think that those are moments that we all have experienced and walked through. But what I love about this poem is that She's describing this moment. It's rainy and it's boring, and she's sitting in her kitchen with desultory weather and a dull, ruinous landscape. And out of nowhere, she catches this lean incandescent. That's the interesting part, is when it says a certain minor light may still lean incandescent. I always think that's kind of a double meaning, because she's saying it may lean, like it kind of may suddenly kind of move itself and lean incandescent, but it also has a sense of like a lean, a sliver of incandescence, and even under all the dullness there is this kind of lean shining of beauty beyond. And so she's describing this moment in which she does not expect a miracle or an accident. She doesn't expect anything to shine in with hope. And then this very ordinary thing, this rook cleaning and rearranging its feathers, kind of shines out to her, and it bestows a largesse and honor, a one might say love. And there's again this sense of, even as she is not really wanting this thing, she's kind of at a state where she doesn't expect, she's kind of, you know, descended into that place of being willing to not hope for a beauty, for a moment of surprise and loveliness. But then, in this ordinary moment, there it appears. And because of all of these moments when she doesn't want it, she's not expecting it, she says, I walk wary and skeptical. And I think that that's also an interesting part of this poem, is that she kind of comes back over and over again to saying, a lot of this depends on basically, it could be our interpretation. Is it a miracle or an accident? As she writes down here, it's kind of the sense of patching together something. And when she says miracles occur, if you care to call those spasmodic tricks of radiance miracles. But you know that to her, even as she's saying this in this kind of wry cynicism, that it was a miracle, because she ends it for saying the long wait has begun again for the angel, for that rare random descent. So there's this sense of the acknowledgement. It's not the hopelessness, it's kind of a resignation in those times of gray and of weariness, that she's not going to wait for the beauty, but underneath it, there is still this suspicion, this wariness that beauty and glory will still break in, that there will still be moments that draw us out, where we're drawn back, even though they seem unbelievable. And so this poem, you know, I've thought about those moments in my life where I've gone through particular graynesses or sadnesses. And the thing that's, I think, particularly powerful and difficult about them is that you have this sense of, will I ever get out of this again? And so far in my life, every time that I've had one and I thought I wouldn't, I always have. And so you have to, what I love about this poem is it kind of draws us into that long wait, that hope, to wait for that moment where the angel will descend randomly again. And I think that that is what we are so often asked to do in our world that seems so gray, is to wait for the long hope of a miracle again, to not let ourselves become totally acquiescent to the world of gray and to think that that is all there is, because it so often proves to us that it's not. Which leads me to my last poem, because I think that what this says to me is, okay, well, if we do think there's hope and beauty, that these moments flare out and they teach us something true about the world, there's a hope and a meaning underneath everything, how do we wait with wisdom? How do we live through those moments of gray? How do we defy the imminent frame that says that this is all there is? And I think that a great person who teaches us how to do this well is Wendell Berry. And that leads us to this next poem, which is one of my favorites. Oh my goodness. This also has a long kind of history for me. If you are a true friend of mine, somewhere along the way, I will have demanded to read you this poem / recite you this poem at some inconvenient and strange moment. I've literally done this to most of my close friends because I just love this poem so much. And I think kind of to give you a backup, before we read the poem, something that really helped me understand this is knowing about Wendell Berry, first of all, and then reading part of his book called Life as a Miracle, which is what I quoted from at the very beginning. And to give you a little background on Wendell Berry, he is an author who is still living. He has written a great collection of novels and poetry and essays. He is famous for being a conservationist. He lives on a tiny farm in Kentucky, and he has kind of fought for the preservation of Kentucky. Kentucky has been kind of the subject of being wrestled over through big corporations, and there have been, and farmers, and there's just been a lot of difficulties in Kentucky. But he has this love and this hope for this place that he spent his whole life kind of fighting for and writing about. And his series of novels, really interestingly, are all centered around Port Royal, which is this fictionalized version of where he lives in Kentucky. And literally all of his novels are kind of different stories from this imagined place, which I think is so wonderful. And the idea of it kind of being, he wants to draw you into this sense of loyalty to a place where there's hope for creating and preserving it. And I recently read, I've been reading over Christmas break. I actually read part of it over Christmas break and then reread the exact same part of it that I reread last Christmas break, this Christmas break, of his book called Life is a Miracle. And it's Essays Against the Modern Superstition. And basically what he's saying in this book is, he is saying that sometimes the way that we approach the world is inherently damaging and will not help us to preserve what is good and what is good in life. And the way that he kind of poses this is the way that we approach the idea of a problem or a mystery. So he says that in our scientific age, and this is not true of a real science, what scientists, I think most people would think of. I think what most scientists would not hold to this, but kind of a scientism can hold that all of life is a problem. And I don't mean a problem in the sense of it's all bad. I mean a problem in the sense of What we don't understand can ultimately be solved. But Barry is under the impression that sometimes there are things in life which are not problems that can be solved. They are mysteries. And that unless we treat them as such, we will kind of treat the world like a machine rather than like a great connected tapestry and all these things kind of hold together. And that if we treat people like problems rather than mysteries, if we think, well, if I can just tug and pull on this, ultimately we do harm to them. So his pull is to say, okay, we need to treat the world as a mystery and as a miracle, and only then can we really accept it and cultivate it. And he talks about this specifically with, you know, places. So he's talking about kind of the way that that communities have dissolved. And he says, if you think about it as a problem, you think, oh, well, if we just put in this corporation, we can fix this and we can fix the schools. And of course, he's for all those things. He wants to fix the communities. But he's saying, as long as we treat it as a problem, we treat people as machines. We're not treating them like the actual thing that they are. And that ultimately that will kind of lock us in this limited experience where we aren't actually able to come up with solutions because we're treating people and places like machines. And we are not able to treat them as the mysteries that they are, and approach them with wonder and willingness to be open to the unfathomable, and that some things will not be solved, and that the correct way to approach them is as mysteries. And so he's really against, it's funny, in his own way, he is very much fighting as hard as he can to help people see the world as a mystery, to live into that, to not be captured and kind of gotten into, you know, like Bose and I were talking about last week in The Wrinkle in Time, when everyone's doing the same thing and kind of living in this uniformity and this consumerism. He's trying to help us break out of that and see the world as not full of problems to be solved, but mysteries to be engaged with, to be wrestled with, and to be honored. And this all kind of relates to how we see the world, the wonder that we experience in it, you know? If I see the world like in, it's beautiful to see E. Cummings' world where he sees everything is giving more than is there, and with this double meaning. But it's easy sometimes to see the world like Sylvia Plath's, where we want to see beauty and wonder, but we kind of become doubtful that we will be able to. And so I think that this poem is kind of a battle cry for how to see it in that way, in that way of beauty. So I want to read this to you and say a few things about it, and then that will be us for this week for the podcast. So this is the Mad Farmer's Liberation Front. Love the quick profit, the annual raise, vacation with pay. Want more of everything ready-made. Be afraid to know your neighbors and to die. And you will have a window in your head. Not even your future will be a mystery anymore. Your mind will be punched in a card and shut away in a little drawer. When they want you to buy something, they will call you. When they want you to die for profit, they will let you know. So friends, every day, do something that won't compute. Love the Lord. Love the world. Work for nothing. Take all that you have and be poor. Love someone who does not deserve it. Denounce the government and embrace the flag. Hope to live in that free republic for which it stands. Give your approval to all that you cannot understand. Praise ignorance, for what man has not encountered, he has not destroyed. Ask the questions that have no answers. Invest in the millennium. Plant sequoias. Say that your main crop is the forest that you did not plant, and that you will not live to harvest. Say that the leaves are harvested when they have rotted into mold. Call that profit. Prophesy such returns. Put your faith in the 2 inches of humus that will build under the trees every 1,000 years. Listen to carrion. Put your ear close and hear the faint chattering of the songs that are to come. Expect the end of the world. Laugh. Laughter is immeasurable. Be joyful, though you have considered all the facts. So long as women do not go cheap for power, please women more than men. Ask yourself, will this satisfy a woman satisfied to bear a child? Will this disturb the sleep of a woman near to giving birth? Go with your love to the field. Lie down in the shade. Rest your head in her lap. Swear allegiance to what is nighest your thoughts. And as soon as the generals and the politicos can predict the motions of your mind, lose it. leave it as a sign to mark the false trail, the way you didn't go. Be like the fox who makes more tracks than necessary, some in the wrong direction. Practice resurrection. It is so beautiful, and I think that this, more than almost any other thing that I have ever read, gives me this picture of how we have to live into finding wonder, which is that sometimes the way that we have to live in finding wonder is remembering that the things that will be the most meaningful, that will be the most powerful, are the things which we cannot understand, the things that go beyond this box of things that we can compute and contract and make sense of. So that is what I wanted to share with you all today. Nothing too thought through, nothing too, I mean, I suppose it is deep, but nothing too intellectual. I mostly just wanted to share with you all kind of a wonder for the day, an encouragement to do something that won't compute. Remember that you are not a problem, you are a mystery, and so is your world. And also to remind you to enter the giveaway, to look forward to our Lenten journey through art together, and also to enjoy cultivating the garden of your soul. I wish you all a very lovely week, and I will talk to you very soon.